Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome. You're with the International Black Summit Talk Show, coming to you from the International Black Summit Network. This is Chakaysha, coming to you from Memphis, Tennessee, and the whole gang's here with us. Let's hear the roll call. Where are we coming from?
Henrietta in Chicago.
Jill in Atlanta.
Lonnie Greenwich, Jamaica, New York.
There you go, there you go. We're all over. We know you're listening from around the world. So it's great having you here. And I ask you to sit back, enjoy. In fact, take a moment, call a friend and ask them to join you. The call-in number is 646-716-9827. And as we get comfortable and you grab somebody else to join us, we're going to just get ourselves centered, and we center ourselves with our declaration, the Declaration of the International Black Summit. Henrietta, please.
The Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity, with the possibility being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the burdens of our men, women, and children, building economies, responsible funding our communities, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. Chicago, Illinois, October 9th, 2011. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. Chakaysha, back to you.
Thank you. Wow. The declaration, I tell you, it just touches me and it inspires me every time I'm listening, saying it, and just being with those words. So just welcome, everyone. I'm excited. We're in the month of October. Can you believe it? We're in the 10th month of the year. 2011. So the show tonight and for the month of October is about Obama, our president, you know, Barack Hussein Obama. And tonight we're talking about family and the family in the White House. So, you know, all this month is Obama, so make sure you're with us next week, and we'll be sharing with you before the show ends the topics for the next 2 weeks of the month of October. But tonight it's family night, and we're talking about family. You know, family's really big, and so we're going to be talking about that, but I also want to check in. We're going to be looking at our Kwanzaa principle. We'll be having announcements. And we definitely want to hear from you. So remember to press number sign, the pound sign that looks like the number sign on your phone, and the number one. And that will let us know that your hand is up, and we want to bring you in for your comments or questions. So this is the night. You know, around the world they talk about making sure you have one night where the family eats together. So tonight we're doing family of the White House. Okay. So let's just think about that. Barack Hussein Obama's in the White House. So as we like to say at the annual event, who's in the house? So the people in the White House with him is Michelle, his wife, his two daughters, Malia and Sasha, and his mother-in-law, Mrs. Robertson, and the dog, Bo. So we're going to be talking about all of those people, and we're going to include the dog, Bo, too. So before I get started, I'm going to just let Jill give us one announcement, and we'll be doing announcements in and out. And also, if the Kwanzaa principle is available, we can have that right after Jill does our first announcement for us. To you, Jill.
Thank you. I just want to remind everyone, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. And I want to remind everyone of the purpose of the International Black Summit. The purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the Black community and the world. In regards to the announcements, you can find everything on our website, which is www.blacksummit.org. October 22nd, there is a tour to China. It's going to be from October 22nd to October 30th. If you would like more information, please go to our website, and contact information and how you can purchase your ticket, et cetera, is located on the website. Also, in October 28th is the leadership meeting that will be held in Chicago. And then the 29th, and correct me, Shakesha, the 29th and 30th is an open forum. Is that correct for anyone that wants to take part and listen and hear more about the International Black Summit? That is also located in Chicago, and that will also be posted on the website as far as the hotel and information and the content of the meeting. And again, for information for our purpose, declaration, to look, read about blogs and articles and upcoming events, to look at the photos, you can go to blacksummit.org. Back to you, Shakesha.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Yes, it's great having our announcements. It's great having our website. And also joining us is the chat room. We have people calling in on the phone, and you can listen to us on the computer. And you're also able to listen to us after tonight, 24 hours, anytime you like, you can download us from the computer. So we'll definitely be looking forward to people with their comments and questions. And some of the things that will get covered tonight is about family. There will be a couple of things about what's going on, what types of things President Obama has brought forth and firsts that are happening around that. But the central piece will be family. And as I was sharing with you earlier, that it's his wife, his two daughters, and his mother-in-law. So, you know, I find that great. He is surrounded by women. Isn't that beautiful? Beautiful. So as a mother, I'm always interested in the children. So the two girls are in school. They're doing well. And some interesting facts on his daughters. First of all, his youngest daughter is the youngest child in the White House since John F. Kennedy. So she's the youngest. That's Sasha. So I thought that was interesting. And she's the first child to be born in the 21st century that resides in the White House. So a lot of interesting things there. As you know, they have their dog, Bo, who is a Portuguese water dog. And what I was finding out about the water dogs is they were actually fishermen. You know how you notice dogs that they use when you hunt for birds that are pointers? They actually have dogs that assist with fishing. And that's why it's called a water dog. It fishes from the warm waters of Portugal and goes all the way into Iceland. And what was special about Bo was that Bo was a gift from Ted Kennedy. That's how Bo ended up at the White House. He was a gift from Ted Kennedy. And that was one of the things that Michelle and Barack promised the girls if he went to the White House that they would be able to have a dog. So he delivered on that promise. And if you remember from last week, we talked about the promises that he delivered on, one being the health bill. We covered many, many, many things. But just with those couple of tidbits, I just want to check in, see if we have any hands raised.
Actually, we have 716-984. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. 716-984.
Oh, yeah, that's me. Great. That's me.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah.
You're on the air.
At the beginning of the call, because I wasn't sure what the procedure was as far as announcing ourselves. So this is the first call that I'm dialing in on. Calling out of Chicago, and so I didn't necessarily have a question, but since you asked, I guess I'd like to kind of get a sense of what the outcome that we want to create with discussing the family in the White House. Are we going to be looking at how does it apply to us? Is our life a reflection of that? Like, what's the ultimate intention of the conversation?
Okay, great question, great question. Context. Thank you. Thank you. So one intention is to share the family, just the family of the White House. I know I grew up with the president that I remember the most as a young person was John F. Kennedy, and I was always interested in his family. And as I, you know, watch each president enter the White House, I've always been concerned about the family. I have three children, so I'm family orientated. So one is just the intention is to know about the children. And you could take that to a broader sense. How are our children in the world? How are the children in your house? How are the children in the houses of America? So that's one way to listen. Another way is the condition of our young people, you know. So that's another place to listen from as we think about who's in the White House and as I speak of family.
Right.
And, you know, the family, like what's the condition of family? You know, those are all the backdrop of this conversation as I'm sharing about the family. We'll also be looking at some of the distinctions of the International Black Summit. And the one distinction that comes up for me as we're listening to this show and this topic is the distinction self-generating. Self-generating talks about finding value, about bringing yourself forth, about what is it that you're up to. And, you know, as I share a little bit more, we'll look at what is up, what are we up to as family. So many things, but just to kind of set the context, that'll be one of the ways we're looking at it. And for the whole month, we're looking at and sharing around Obama in terms of, one, that he's our president, and that we'll be engaging with you and you'll be engaging with us. Like, what does that mean? How, you know, the election is coming up, all those types of things. So we're in a conversation. We're definitely
right.
in a conversation, yes. So did okay. that give you a little?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Thank you. And your name is?
Bowie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to us tonight. And please come back. If any other questions or comments come up, you just if you press 1 now, your hand will go down. And then you press 1 again, and it'll come up.
All right. I will do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The next person I'd like to speak on for a little while is Mrs. Robertson, the mother-in-law. The mother-in-law resides in the White House with the first family. And that's really great when you think about multi-generational. So in the White House is multi-generation. And so to me that's important because many households are multi-generation. You know, generational. I know growing up, there were many times when we had other family members that shared our home on a temporary basis, and sometimes for long extended days, you know, periods of time, like people, you know, have lived with us, you know, 3 to years amount of time. So in the White House is multi-generational experience. The mother-in-law is assisting the first family with their daughters because being the first family, first lady and president, they're quite busy. And so the mother-in-law, Mrs. Robertson, at the request of Michelle and Baraka, actually took on coming to the White House. You know, she's grown up. She grew up in Chicago, and that was her place. And she came a little kicking and screaming, but she came because that's how grandmothers are. They do what's needed to be done. So that's been very interesting. And I just want to throw it out to our hosts there. What do you see about that in terms of family, your own family, the a family in the White House, this whole concept of multi-generational?
Well, this is Glenn, and what I wanted to say about that is that one of the things to see, you know, there's a lot of conversation around the black family and the nucleus of the black family. And to have a multi-generational situation like that speaks to the possibility that we as a community, as a family, have and can share with each other. So I think that that's something that's very important to get a grandmother or grandfather's perspective, as well as the direct parents. Because there are things that, as a grandparent, can be done that are much different than what a parent would do. It gives the children different perspectives. So I think that that's a great thing. And it's someone in the family who is supporting the children on a level that that a busy schedule may not preclude. So I think it's better than nanny, better than having some hired help. It's actually, it is family, and there's nothing like family. Back to you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, right. You know, they always say it's the hand that rocks the cradle that raises a nation. And so inside of this, you can see this. And one of the areas I'll go to Jill, but what I'm going to come back to you about is a letter that President Obama wrote to his daughters, you know, a letter to my daughters, and he also addressed to the young people of America. So, Jill, what do you see about the multi-generational?
I see it as it's a reflection, especially just to have, well, it's a reflection of what's going on in America in regards to the, you know, parents are getting older, or it's just a matter of convenience and wanting the parents to be around and having them live with you as either a necessity or a comfort. And it just shows that there are a lot of grandparents that are living with their immediate families, and for the president to have his mother-in-law move in and live in the White House and help take care of the children, it's a reflection of the times. And I think it was surprising, yet something that they knew that they needed for their family. It fit their family, and they went for it. And so I admire them for just doing what they would have, I guess, normally have done if they weren't in the White House. And it allows their children to have a realistic view of somewhat of a normal life to have their grandmother around. I think that's powerful.
Oh, thank you. Yes, grandmother, and that's one of the things President Obama actually brought up in his letter to his daughters that was he had published in the Parade magazine. And one of the areas he talked about was grandmothers and what he had learned from his grandmother and one of the things that he wanted for his children to learn. And his quote was, his grandmother, she helped me understand that America is great, not because it is perfect, but because it can always be made better, and that the unfinished work of perfecting our union falls to each of us. It's a charge we pass on to our children, coming closer with each new generation to what we know America should be. So that was one of the things that he stated in the letter. He spoke once again the importance of his grandmother and his grandmother in his raising of him, and here he shares that with his children. And you can hear him actually imparting how that the whole way of the United States is really in each of our hands, that it's not just him as president that makes America, but that really he is our representative. We put him in office. For me, our political officers are our representatives. They're doing the work that we want to have done. And this is one of the reasons why we're focusing on Obama this month is, one, I say, is for us to get very clear on what it is that we want our representatives to be representing us on. And that's what I've been getting out of the research here, is like, what is it that I want to be clear on? And some of the things I want to be clear on that President Obama has been bringing up is the importance of the youth, the importance of our children all over the United States, not just our personal children, but children. So the other thing he spoke of in his letter was the fact that he has to be shared you know, as a parent, that we think of him as president, and we're like, you know, we have demands. But one of the things he brought up in his letter to his daughters is that it's about them too, that, you know, he's concerned. He knows he's a father, and he's going to, you know, be focused on that too. So I found it very interesting that he was still keeping fatherhood in perspective. And if you guys remember, there was a conference, some statements that he made where he talked about fathers stepping up to the plate, and several commercials where he spoke to fathers and he let the world and let the United States know how important fathers are, especially fathers and girls in their daughters' lives. So, you know, I like that. I like that he actually looked at fathers and fathers in their daughters' lives, because I'm a former school teacher, and I know there's a lot of things we're looking at for the young women, for the young girls. And so one of the things he spoke of in the letter was fathers, you know, and their responsibility. So once again, I'm going to stop for a moment, check to see if we have any hands up.
No, we have a lot of callers, but no hands are up. Again, if you want to make a comment, press 1, and you'll be live on the air.
Well, I just want to welcome all our callers on the line. We're always excited when you're here. That's why we're here, because we want you to be here. So thank you. Thank you for our consistent listeners and for our brand-new listeners. So you're listening to the International Black Summit talk show. We come on every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you're here with Chakaysha coming to you out of Memphis, Tennessee. And we're talking about President Obama, and we're talking about the family in the White House. We've shared a little bit about the two daughters, Malia and Sasha. We've talked about their pet, the water dog, Bo. And we had a chance to talk about the importance of their grandmother being there with them. And the letter to his daughter that appeared in the Parade magazine. In a couple of minutes, I'm going to tell you the date on that. So if you would like to look that up, or you can go on the internet and just put Parade magazine, President Obama's letter to his daughter, and you can see it in its entirety. Okay. So,
okay, they have a comment.
Yes, please, Jill.
I just also, the other thing that stands out for me in regards to this discussion is the fact that we, of course, have an African-American president who is married with two children, and they are together. And I know that the biggest, and sometimes I want to say not the biggest misconception, but, you know, there are a lot of African-American families that are a two-parent family, and they're raising their children. They have an in-law possibly living with them or not. But there are a lot of African-American married families. And just to have an African-American president to be a father and a husband, it just says a lot. You always see so much negative media in regards to African-American families or the dismantling of African-American families. And then to have the president of the United States be an African-American father and husband speaks volumes. And I just wanted to acknowledge that part in regards to the topic of the content of the conversation, that he is a father and a husband. And he is he is in the role, and he's doing a great job as being both, and that it's not just a misconception that the African-American men are just running from the idea of playing the two roles.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Yes, I'm just really glad that you took on that acknowledgement because he is doing that job. He is doing those jobs. As you said, he's a father and he's a husband. And, you know, he's stepping up to that plate. One of the things that I liked about President Obama was the fact that he has a date night with his wife. That, you know, being a husband, you know, is something that's on his mind that he attends to. And then, like you said, he's a father. And one of his lines in his letters that I found to be very interesting and just uplifting, he said that he wanted, these are the things I want for you, to grow up in a world with no limits on your dreams and no limits on your achievements beyond your reach, and to grow into compassionate, committed women who will help build that world. And I want every child to have the same chance to learn and dream and grow and thrive that you girls have. That's why I've taken our family on this adventure. And he says, I am so proud of you, both of you. I love you more than you ever can know. And I am grateful every day for your patience, poise, grace, and humor as we prepare to start our new life together in the White House. And he says, love, Dad. So, you know, that's really great. And, you know, I think in the area of the health care, his bill around health care actually also speaks to him being father and husband. And like he says, what he wants for, you know, all children in the world is to be able to have, you know, health care. And, you know, I always think of our neighbor to the north of us, Canada. You know, what their health bill is like and how health is provided for Canadians. And I'm proud to say that, you know, we're making strides toward, you know, really looking at the health of all of our children and of all of our people in the United States. So, you know, I just want us to, you know, just really kind of continue to look at, you know, the health care, being parent, looking at the state of the condition of our youth. And when I say that, I'm speaking to myself, because that's one thing about the distinction self-generating. It's always coming from the I. So I as a parent, I as a citizen, I as a voter, I'm concerned about the health care in the United States, and I was happy to see the passing of the health care bill. So, any more comments out there? Looking for your comments, your questions. Did any hands go up there, Jill?
Oh, nope, not yet. We have a couple of callers. Again, press 1 if you have a comment. Glenn, anyone in the chat room?
We have a couple folks in the chat room, but no comments.
Okay, great. So, President Obama and the family in the White House. Interesting, House family. We know a lot's been going on about the homes in the United States. A lot of people struggling around that. There's been more, you know, more things passed around that, more information about what to do if you're still having problems with your home. I know just recently what came up, and this is something hopefully I'll be able to give you some more information on next show, but now you actually have banks who are now suing people who gave back their homes. So, you know, once again, the House, the White House, also points to our houses and, you know, something that's something we still want to keep looking at and being aware of. And so I see that's where I want to get more information, because at one point I was thinking we were starting to get over that hump, and right now it doesn't seem that that's all true. But, you know, some people are in homes, so we're happy for that. Some people are struggling, but they're still not giving up. So fantastic. Anything you see, Glenn, that you want to share around that?
Well, I was just thinking the whole conversation around the banks. And the basically what has happened is that the banks sold it to a secondary market. And basically what took place was that the bank then fraudulently prepared documents because they didn't carry those documents forward to the changing of hands. And the banks have been shown to falsify the documents of ownership of the homes, and that's what folks are actually suing the banks for. So when you look at it, you look at the impact of the households, you look at the impact of the economy around these banks who've kick people out of their houses, push people out of their houses, and actually don't even own the houses, and are not doing anything to really generate it. So it's a big issue from just the relocation. You know, we've been speaking about family tonight, and we talk about the disruptiveness of foreclosure, and to have this epidemic occur prior to the Obama administration, so let's get clear about it, that this was something that was caused out of a Bush era, and President Obama inherited that and was also forced to cripple the whole economic infrastructure for real estate. So the real estate market, the banking market, and then, of course, the banking failure, all of those things have contributed drastically to the common family who's now dealing with it. And, you know, one of the things that most people don't remember or are not familiar with, but there was always a level of foreclosure, and the foreclosure was usually around three things. Foreclosure was if somebody lost their job, if somebody became disabled, or a divorce. So those were the three things that would occur and would force a foreclosure. However, because of the predatory market that took place and the variable rate mortgages that were forced on specifically folks of non-majority or of African and Latino descent that were forced into it because of the greed on Wall Street, that could have been in fixed rate homes but were given a variable because that's where there was more money to be made by the banks. So a lot of this criteria began to snowball. So the family in America have been affected drastically by this economic crunch and by the banks and by the mortgage and the foreclosures. And it's still a problem that we as a country have not addressed, because we haven't looked at that whole real estate market. And we've still got folks who are unstable in terms of the banks that are, that have fraudulently taken people out. So, I mean, there's a lot of, I don't want to skew the whole conversation quite to that, but there clearly are a lot of implications that we're at effect at this point because of, and it's affecting the family. Back to you, Keisha.
Thank you. Thank you. And once again, that just brings us back to the distinction self-generation. Part of the distinction self-generating is about not necessarily just like your finger kind of pointing out and saying this person did that and why doesn't this person help me and this person. Inside of self-generating, you also get the opportunity to change causes, to cause changes in your life and what's going on for you. So as Glenn was sharing with us about some of the reasons that foreclosure happened, it just brought me once again to remembering when I was owning a home is, you know, I had to really take on, you know, looking at how am I spending my money? Am I spending my money on things that aren't going to bring any value? You know, am I doing cable? Am I going to the sports events? Am I, you know, buying $300 shoes, which I never did? But, you know, just putting it in perspective, you know, money is tight, but who's always in control of my money is me. So part of self-generating is for me to know that and for me then to, you know, actually take steps to have shifts in my life. You know, sometimes people say, well, look, I'm working at McDonald's. I don't have cable. I'm not this. So, hey, look, I am being responsible. And that's true. And I just keep pointing to the only changes I can make in my life is by what I do. And so the distinction self-generating just always has me keep looking back at myself and looking at where else can I cause changes for myself. I personally now, if like looking at the health care, I'm looking at health care for myself. I'm diabetic. Now I get to self-generate. I get to say, is this meal I'm about to eat going to enhance my health or send me to the doctor? And so inside of that, I get to self-generate and say, you know what, I'm not having that pizza with cheese and all that pepperoni. You know what, I'm making a pizza like I made tonight that was had tomatoes, had onions. I spread a little lentil beans on there and put that baby in the oven, and I tell you, it was delicious. And that's helping my health. So I got a health care plan. I got my own health care plan, you know, that I'm putting in effect and that I'm making sure I have keep moving forward. So as we talk about the family in the White House, I'm also looking at my family in my house. And with that, we'll just go back to Jill, have her give us another announcement for perhaps people who just joined us and just excited that you're out there and you're listening to us. To you, Jill.
Thank you, Shakesha. Again, you're listening to the International Black Summit Radio Show. You can find all of our information on our website, which is blacksummit.org. And just a reminder, the International Black Summit is a conversation being given by life to the world through people of Black African descent. And just to let you know the purpose of the International Black Summit, the purpose of IBS is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the Black community and the world. And we have our annual inquiry that comes up each year during the summit, which is held the first week of August. And the inquiry for this year, 2011-2012, is what is possible in life when I be with what is? What is the gift? And the last announcement is our China tour. There is a tour of China, which will be held October 22nd to October 31st. And for more detailed information, please go to blacksummit.org. And again, always tune in to us 8 Eastern Standard Time every Sunday evening for our radio show. Thank you. Back to you, Shakesha.
Okay, yes, thank you. Now, as I was sharing about health, I'm going to talk in a few minutes about Michelle Obama and her huge impact she's having around the health of our nation. But I just want to share some facts about the health bill and some of the things that are being addressed in that plan. I'm going to cover about 4 points here. One is requiring insurance companies to cover pre-existing conditions. Second point, creating a small business health tax credit to help them provide insurance. Three, requiring large employers that don't offer coverage to contribute a percentage of payroll toward their employees' health care costs. The fourth one is establishing a national health insurance exchange with a range of private insurance options, as well as a new plan, a new public plan based on benefits available to the members of Congress. So those are some of the things that showed up in the health plan. And we'll continue to be talking about that. The other thing I wanted to move to, because we're starting around the clock back up to 12, is Michelle Obama. We just finished talking about health plan, what's the condition of the health in the United States. And the first lady has, I mean, she's in movement. She's in motion. She has the White House garden. This month they actually harvest from the garden. She had community children come in and assist in the harvesting from the White House garden. We've seen her on numerous news shows showing her with her program that's involved in the schools called Movement. We've seen her doing, let me see if I can say it right, the Doogie, did I say it right?
The Dougie.
Oh, see,
the Dougie.
The Dougie. See, you know I don't know how to do it, but I saw her doing it. And the First Lady's in shape, and she's asking that we all get in motion, and especially for our young people. Diabetes is on the rise, especially among the youth. And she's shown us a way that we can impact that. We don't need a bill. We don't need anybody to do anything. We can do it in our own homes. What are we putting on our plates? Are we encouraging our children to eat fruit? Am I eating fruit? Because your children will do what you do. And so, you know, the question is, am I eating fruit? Am I eating my 5 vegetables a day? But the First Lady is really on the case, as we used to like to say in the 60s, on having us be in motion. And she's sweeping the nation, and she's just really reaching out to the young people through these programs. On various websites, you can go on and see the different health programs. As a school teacher, I remember one of the programs just before the Obamas went into office was the 5. It was the number 5, just reminding us about our fruit and vegetable intake, to take in 5. And she continues that with the whole garden piece, like, you know, am I growing a garden? If you've listened to some of our previous shows, we've had our master gardeners on, educating us and sharing with us how to grow your garden, one that saves you income, not buying everything at the store. It's also improving your health. You're getting non-chemical things if you're growing your food organic, and it's just putting you in better health, and once again, you're in motion. Gia, what was it about the gardening that you saw for yourself that you hadn't seen before that you can kind of hear in what First Lady Michelle Obama has been sharing with us?
Well, I was looking at the garden in two areas. One, the actual garden itself and producing a garden, either whether it's outside of your home or inside of your home, but then the other piece was the spiritual garden within. And the way Glenn and the other two urban gardeners were talking, when they were talking about harvesting and taking care of the plant, it was also looking at taking care and harvesting yourself, your inner self, and so that you can grow closer to God or whomever it is that you believe in. You can grow closer. For me, it's God. You can grow closer to God and prosper in life. And so just looking at the two gardens, the inner garden as far as spirituality garden within self, and then the garden bearing fruit and vegetables, and looking at the two and cultivating the two and connecting was something that was pretty neat for me, because I was just able to just look at them both in alignment and go from there. And I was excited about the information that was shared.
Okay,
back to you,
thank
Keisha.
You. Thank
welcome.
You. And as I mentioned earlier, October the 5th was Garden Harvest Day at the White House. And children from Bondcraft Elementary School were there assisting in that. So, you know, the First Lady is bringing the White House right outside the doorstep, down into the garden. I mean, you get to get into the dirt with the First Lady and, you know, experience healthy food. You're experiencing a healthy way of life, and they're, you know, starting to plant. So, you know, for me, the First Family is setting a great example, in one that they're all active. As many people know, President Obama is a person who exercises every day. So does First Lady Obama, and you can look at the children. You see they're in motion. You know, got to walk that dog. You got to play with that dog. You got to play catch. So, you know, they're exemplifying what it is that they're asking of us. You know, I always love what John F. Kennedy said. Do not ask what, oh, let me see, I'm almost forgetting it.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Yeah, which ties right back into our distinction, self-generating. You know, that's what self-generating is. And just as before we close, I just want to bring our Kwanzaa principle in. There's seven of them. There's a lot of different places we could have gone with the Kwanzaa principle. But for me, what I'm getting is umoja, unity. You know, that there's unity in the White House to what they're saying should happen out in the United States is also happening right there in the White House. And, you know, lead from example. And that's what I can see when I look at the family in the White House. And I want to just pause for Jill to give us the oxygen room. Will we have oxygen room tonight?
Yes, we will have the oxygen room. And I will get that number for you.
Okay.
And the number for the oxygen room is 213-325-3434. Let me just double check that again. I'm sorry. The number for the oxygen room is 218-862-6420. That's 218-862-6420. And the PIN number is 797-4834-pound. That's 797-4834-pound. Back to you, Shakesha.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, now, we've been talking about health. We've been talking about the garden. And we've been talking about eating right. So
So the First Lady, Michelle Obama, has written a book. It's called White House Kitchen Garden and Healthy Eating. And it says author, okay, let me look at this again. It says U.S. First Lady's book, White House Kitchen Garden and Healthy Eating, author Nicole Wong, published March 17, 2011. So there's a book out about the White House garden and healthy eating. So there's something there right there for you.
Takesha, I just wanted to add one thing, which I think is just so great. I was at a dinner discussion last night, and we were talking about how back in the day, the black family nucleus was really agricultural, and you had a lot of kids, and one of the things that you were looking to do was to be autonomous in terms of your being able to provide for your family. You grow what you needed, would have sheep to clothe yourself, you have food to clothe yourself, you really worked from within. And I think that that's one of the examples that the first family is actually providing us is for us to begin to look and to be autonomous, to begin to use the garden, use the economy to circulate, to have the family as a nucleus, multi-generational, so that we're working together, so that really that sense of unity and moving forward together is really a great example that's being set by the first family. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. And I'm glad you brought that up. I want to close by saying actually having a garden is a home-based business, folks. You can actually, I watched a television show in California where a couple made an extra $20,000 just from their garden. They grew the food, they were growing the food, and restaurants, then they call restaurants within a 20-mile radius and say, I have organic food that you can come and purchase for me. And the restaurant cooks were coming because they love to have on that menu organic. So if you're looking for extra money in this coming year of 2011, start a garden and call the restaurants. You will have people that want to buy your tomatoes, your potatoes, your vegetables. So, you know, with that in mind, I say once again, eating with the family is important, and growing the food that you eat with the family can be very profitable too. So with that, we're just about to wind down. Did we have any people, anybody with a question or a comment just as we close out from our listeners, Jill?
No, we don't, but I do want to let everyone know that for the next 3 weeks, we will be discussing Obama. On the 16th, we're going to discuss what the president has proposed and how it has directly affected the African-American community and along with the job market. So
join us.
Yes, please. Please join us. It's going to be a great conversation. We're also going to the look at not only the employment, but his accomplishments and what he has done for the African-American community. Back to you, Shakesha.
All righty. And remember, all the months of October has been about Obama. You're able to go blacksummit.org and hear last week's show, which talked about his first and the different policies that he's put into place. So you can go to blacksummit.org and download that to your MP3s and to all the other recording devices that we now are able to use. Or just listen to it right there on the website. And please, please continue to join us and continue to share your comments and questions. We really enjoy our listeners. We enjoyed our question from earlier, where they asked us to share what was the intent. And as we were saying, the intent was to think about the president and the family and the White House, and then just move that to you. What's your intention in your house? and looking at taking the opportunity to self-generate health and motion and time with your family. You know, all that's all wrapped up into, are you being the president?